Welcome everyone to this class on motivation. So you might have to stay motivated to stay awake in here. I'm not sure. It gets kind of warm, but if you need to open the windows, you can. So to start with, this is going to be divided into three parts. I have the importance of goals, and I have the motivating teacher, and then I have methods of motivation. So we'll see how far we get in 45 minutes. So to start with, I would like you to think about something that you don't enjoy doing. I gave most of you a handout. Those of you that came in later, I ran out. But something you don't enjoy doing. Just, I don't know, it might be making your bed, or it might be something that you just cannot get excited about. Whatever you wrote down on your paper, I'm not going to ask you to say what it was. You can if you want to. But I want you to think, I want to propose that your students sometimes feel that way about whatever you're asking them to do. So if your thing is you don't get inspired about washing dishes or whatever, and you ask your student to write a 50-word essay about something, that's not really an essay. But they might feel the same way you do about going and washing a pile of dishes. So that's where we're going to start. And we're adults, and adults have learned in life to cope with things in certain ways. They have strategies that they employ to cope with things that they're not sure what to do with. We at least try to pretend that we know how to cope with them. Children or young teenagers, high schoolers, they may not have that capability yet. They're still developing their feelings, their thoughts, their thought patterns. And so part of our job as a teacher, I think, is to help them develop these skills that will help them in life. And right now we're thinking about the skill of doing something in spite of the fact that you are lacking motivation, seriously lacking motivation. So what do when you come up against something that you're not motivated to do? It varies from person to person, I'm sure. Now, what's the difference between a person that's motivated and a person that's unmotivated? Can you give me a few words that I can put up here on the board? Let's get a few words for motivated. What comes to your mind? Anybody?
Enthusiastic.
Enthusiastic. Another one?
Focused.
Focused.
Purpose.
Purpose. Let's get five on each side.
Inspired.
Inspired. One more.
Excited.
Exactly. All right, let's get a few over here for unmotivated. Should have started with the negative and gone to the positive, but oh well.
Bored.
Surely that never happens in our classrooms.
Lazy.
Three more.
Dull.
Uncaring.
Procrastinating.
That one hits pretty hard home for me. Now think with me about some people in history who have been motivated. I came up with a list of names, and the list could be very long. I thought of George Mueller. I thought of, and some of these are positive, some of them are negative. I thought of Adolf Hitler, Dwight L. Moody, John Wilkes Booth. I just read the book Killing Lincoln, and it was very clear in there that John Wilkes Booth had a motivation to kill the president. That was his drive. The Apostle Paul was motivated. Gehazi, in the story when he stole the gold or whatever it was from the king. Alexander the Great, we could make a list, go on and on, of men and women in history that were motivated. And why was that? What caused them to be motivated? I would propose, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, all these men that I listed, they had a goal somewhere. They had a goal in life. Now, Adolf Hitler's goal was to exterminate all the inferior races except the Aryan race, and he did a lot of bad things to try to accomplish that goal. The Apostle Paul, his goal was heaven, And he made it very clear in his writings that that's what he was aiming towards. And in my mind, this is an extremely important point when it comes to motivating your students. Have a goal. Help them set goals. How many of you do that? Set goals with your students throughout the school year? That's something that I started last year. At the new year, I decided to start doing it, and I would have them set a goal at the beginning of the month. I told them it could be anything. It could be a goal connected to school or a goal not connected to school. It could be just that you want to get better at division facts or something very basic. And then I'd try to remind them at least once during the month to see how far they had gotten on accomplishing that goal. We also set goals for our Bible memory. Every week they would set a goal, and I sometimes would specify that it had to be 3 verses past where they had set their goal the week before. That way they couldn't just keep setting the same goal over and over again without making any progress. I like that because it gives them something they can look at, something they can see. Okay, so I have this goal. How am I doing on getting that goal accomplished? And the feeling that comes when you accomplish a goal, you know how that feels. That's something really powerful. And a young person may not have experienced that yet, and you could be the link in helping him get to that point where he sets a goal, experiences what it feels like to accomplish it. Now, one thing that you have to make sure of is that your students know that you expect them to set realistic goals. So let's just say Fred decides, okay, his goal for the month is 100% on every lesson. 100% on every lesson. Well, you all know that's almost impossible. And it would be good to, I like my students to aim high, don't get me wrong, but it would be good to encourage him to maybe say, I want to get 3 more 100% than I did last month, or something that he can actually attain to, something that's not quite so almost impossible. Because one of the most demoralizing things for a student setting goals, I believe, is when they set a goal and they constantly don't get it. They set it, they miss it. They set it, they miss it. That's not going to have good effects on their self-image and their morale and all that. Now, we expect our students to live up to a certain standard, and we have to make sure we're living up to that standard as well. Any thoughts on goals? You know what? I think that note was for something else, maybe. Yeah, it was. Okay, this yet. It's good to set small goals that a student can accomplish. A mountain climber that goes out to conquer Mount Everest, you don't do that right away. A beginning mountain climber doesn't just go try to tackle the world's highest peak. He will work his way up to that, climb lower mountains, and eventually he might get that privilege of standing on the highest point above sea level on Earth. And so, like I said, the last thing you want to see happen is your student setting a goal and missing it. Setting a goal and missing it. That'll have very bad effects on how he feels about himself. Like I said, I'm a big supporter of expecting a lot of our students, and I still am kind of working through this thing of how much you can expect of a student, how you can have a realistic expectation when you can see results every day, and how much expectations will change the way a student responds to his lessons. But if you think about it in our lives as adults, if you know that there's somebody behind you pushing you along, saying, I'm praying for you, I support you in this, that makes a difference for me, at least, on how hard I work on a project. And that, in my mind, is one of the most powerful things that a teacher can do to motivate a student. So they're the two sides, kind of. You want them to set realistic goals, but you also want them to aim high. Any thoughts on that? What has been your experience on setting goals? How can you help students to set goals that are realistic, as well as keeping them aiming for the highest mark they can get? Any thoughts on that?
I think it's good to break things down into small pieces. They teach choir, and we sometimes try a little more difficult piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time through is just an absolute disaster. But as the students begin to work on sometimes it might only be a measure or two at a time,
mm-hmm.
then when they get that, I think what you just said about them achieving that a goal, that brings huge satisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
When you get worked through a piece and it's done well,
yeah.
it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It builds a foundation for more
right.
motivation.
Break it down into small pieces. It's like a snowball, really, in my mind. If you've got wet snow and you're rolling a snowball through the yard, as soon it's so big you can't push it anymore. And that, in my mind, that's how it is with setting goals and accomplishing them. It just builds on itself. Anything else? All right. Why don't you all stand for a change of position, if you care to? So the next section I've entitled The Motivating Teacher. So if I was to ask you, what's the most important thing about a teacher in order to keep the students motivated, what would you say? Anybody? How do you keep the students motivated at you personally? What do you have to do or be?
Be motivated.
Be motivated yourself, exactly. All right, you may be seated. I would like to present this fact to you, and you can take it for what it's worth, but I believe the teacher is the single most important motivating force that a student has at school. And there are a lot of factors that affect how motivated a student is. We heard this morning about your classroom culture, if learning is the cool thing or not. But the teacher has a lot to do with that. Here's a quote. Think about this. A rock pile ceases to be a rock pile the moment a single man contemplates it, bearing within him the image of a cathedral. Think about that. A rock pile ceases to be a rock pile the moment a single man contemplates it, bearing within him the image of a cathedral. I'm going to be using some thoughts from this book right here. It's called The Motivation Breakthrough, 6 Secrets to Turning On the Tuned Out Child. Sounds like a pretty good book, right? Get it all in a box. So listen to this story about a girl named Megan. It comes out of that book. It's the daughter of the author there. So Megan was, I think, in third grade, fourth grade, and she loved school. She was very outgoing, but school wasn't easy for her. She struggled some with academics and stuff, but she was very outgoing, and she was able to enjoy school in spite of her struggles with her schoolwork. Then she gets, it was in fourth grade, she had a teacher that was very, very just set in her ways and strict and didn't give any extra affirmation or anything like that. So she was known for her 50-word spelling test on Friday. And so Megan one time got 49 right, and she only missed one. But the only thing that was written on her paper was one word wrong, write it 10 times or whatever. That was all that was there. And so this author, he began to see his little girl just wilting under this, and it was really affecting her. She would drag her feet. She was not excited about school. Her sick Mondays became more frequent, and she just, yeah, it wasn't a good thing. So then in fifth grade, she went back to school, and she had a teacher named Miss Noons. And the first day, the teacher commented about Megan's shoes, that she liked her shoes. And then later, I don't know if it was the first day or if it was later, but Megan found a little note written in her homework where as soon as she opened her book, it fell out, and it was from her teacher. It said, and it, she mentioned something about the shoes. She liked the shoes. And the dad began to see his little girl coming back, and eventually she was enjoying school again. She had a bounce in her step. And so that story is pretty, I don't know, which teacher are you? Are you the one word wrong, right 10 times, or are you the Miss Noons in the lives of your students? There's lots of opportunities. One teacher made all the difference to her, to that little girl. Another story about a boy named Daniel. Daniel was very bright, smart, but he struggled with writing, and so school was hard for him. It was hard for him not to be able to put into words what he was thinking in his mind, and he was the type of student that you might label as Here are some words that his teachers used to describe him. Unmotivated, lazy, inconsistent, resistive, passive, inattentive. Sounds a little bit like those words we put up there for unmotivated. But those were the words that the teachers used to describe him. However, Daniel also loved sailing and he loved flying. He soloed on his 16th birthday. But he got a job at the airstrip there, local airstrip, helping take care of the grounds and stuff. And they gave him flying lessons in exchange for his work there. And like I said, he soloed on his 16th birthday. Here's some words that his flight instructor, his sailing coach, the airstrip's owner used to describe Daniel. Enthusiastic, go-getter, dependable, valued, industrious, indispensable, initiative, devoted, focused. It's the same boy that was described as unmotivated, lazy, inconsistent, resistive, passive, and inattentive. What made the difference? There was something that made a difference. And what was the one group doing that lit that spark in Daniel that the other group wasn't? If you ask him, he would say that the airstrip gave him approval, support, acceptance, toleration for errors, belonging, encouragement, camaraderie, understanding, praise, reassurance, and success. So all that changed his whole perspective really on life. And this author was writing about him and came to realize that Daniel just enjoyed summertime when he could do the things that he was good at. Now, students don't always have that privilege. They sometimes just have to do what you tell them to do. But it really sticks out to me that one group labeled him as this, the other group labeled him as this, and it was the same boy they were talking about. No difference there. These kind of stories make me, as a teacher, it's like, I had better pay attention here. Something's going on. If my student is struggling with motivation, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? We can look at him and say, well, the student might have something to do with it. Sure, they might. That's true. But I really think that we as teachers have to look at it as our responsibility to make sure that that motivation gets renewed and restored. However, we have to do that. Be prepared with thoughts on that. We'll come back to that here after a bit. All right, so remember we're talking about the motivating teacher. And in 2001, there was a study done, and college students were asked to write down character traits of their favorite teachers. Behaviors, characteristics. Now remember, these aren't fourth graders. These are college-level students. I want you to listen to the things that they listed, or the most popular things. And some of them are very basic. So, traits of popular teachers. Popular teachers are interested in making a connection with students. Popular teachers are enthusiastic. Popular teachers are punctual and prepared. Popular teachers are concerned about their students. Popular teachers are polite. Popular teachers provide individual help and assistance. Popular teachers use a variety of activities and approaches in class. Popular teachers do not overuse the textbook. Popular teachers are organized. Those are really basic things, a lot of them. But some of those really basic things are terribly hard to do. I don't know what your school desk looks like after a school day, but I know mine sometimes looks like a wreck, especially if you open the drawers. You might be able to keep the top looking decent, but when you open the drawers, yeah. But that, in my mind, just brings out, your students see that stuff, and it makes an impression on them. And again, we expect our students to come in on time from recess. If they don't, there might be a penalty. We expect them to keep their desks neat. If they don't, there might be a penalty. We're going to talk about that in a bit too, but if we expect more out of them than we expect out of ourselves, we're going to lose their respect. Does it matter if we don't live up to all those standards? Here's that point that I made earlier that didn't connect to anything. If we expect them to live up to a certain standard, are we exempt from that? Any thoughts? If a student is motivated, I mean, if a student is not motivated, whose fault is it? What do you think? You can be hard on yourselves if you want, or hard on other teachers. Let's move on to the last section, methods of motivation. And this might be the reason that you picked this workshop, I don't know. Because if you read the description, it said something about how do you motivate? Do you motivate? Do you threaten or do you hold a lot of sweets out in front of them? Or how do you do it? What do you do? He said, come to learn some better methods or something really good like that. Why don't you stand again? I know it's warm in here. So, I would like to hear some thoughts on this. Yeah, before we even start, let's talk about it a little bit. So, here's a scenario. Well, yeah. Threatening a student in order to improve their behavior. What do you guys think? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? So, if it's a good thing, put your thumb up. If it's a bad thing, put it down. If it's kind of in the middle, everybody, show me your thumbs. All right, so I'm seeing kind of mostly bad on that. What about saying... So if you get 100% on your math test, I'll give you $10. Again, thumbs good, bad, in the middle. Okay, I'm mostly seeing bad on that. You may be seated. So just think about that. If you have any more thoughts on that at the end, here, we're done with this section, just let me know. We'll talk about it. Why do we want to motivate our students? What's the point of motivating them anyway?
Compelling them to move forward.
So they can move forward. What else? To make it easier for ourselves. Good point. What else?
We want to watch them grow.
I think it's really good for you as a teacher, for me as a teacher, to think about why I am implementing this incentive program or why I am deciding that I'm going to give a spanking if such and such so-and-so doesn't do what he's supposed to do. Why? Like, what's our goal here? Very good things were mentioned. And once we've decided why we're going to do it, why we want to do it, then we have to decide if what we're going to do is actually going to accomplish the goal that we have for each student. So, let's think first about punishing to motivate. I'm sure you probably have had it done to you even, maybe. If your grades don't improve on the next lesson, you'll lose 5 minutes of recess. If you aren't finished with your math paper in the next 15 minutes, you will receive a spanking. Some of you may have used that, and I'm not condemning you for that at all. I want to think about what we're communicating to our student when we say that. Two things I wrote down that we're communicating to our student. One, we're communicating to them that we are in control here, and you better do what I say or else. Okay? Kind of the dictator approach. And for me personally, that's not really the image that I want my students to have of me, dictator with a big stick. Not really. Now, I acknowledge there's a place for that kind of thing. I'm not knocking that. Also, the second thing is we're connecting their inability to accomplish a task with something negative. And so that task will likely, unless something changes, that task will always be associated with negative in their minds, not with something positive. Let's think about incentives a little bit. $5 for every 100% you get on a test. You might hear this more from a parent, maybe from a teacher. It might just depend on the situation. If you get your math paper finished in the next 15 minutes, you are allowed to pick a piece of candy from the candy jar on the desk. Sounds pretty good. Now, I do want to say here that there are two ways to give an instruction to a student or to a child or anybody. You can use this method. You can say, You're not allowed to go out for recess until your math is finished. Or you can say, you are allowed to go out for recess once your math is finished. Saying the exact same thing, but one of them holds a much more positive connotation than the other one. And that's something that it's hard to do, but it's a really important thing, I think, to communicate with your students in that way. So, I like incentives. I really do. But I have experienced, and I've seen, and I've even had a parent tell me that he feels like he used incentives too much with his children. And I could see that in the way his students, I taught several of his children, how they performed in school. They were good at school, but when it came, when there was no reward, it was kind of like, well, why do we have to do our best? And it doesn't really matter. So, three things that I wrote down for what we should think about here in connection with these incentives, rewards. So, in this book, he says that the use of rewards is considered to be the most commonly used motivational approach in America's schools. The most commonly used. And I'm guessing we probably all have used rewards of some kind in our classrooms over the years that we've taught, if we've taught at all. Second thing to consider, are we sometimes rewarding behavior or work that should be expected as the norm for the student, something that they should just do rather than something they should be rewarded for? Oh, I guess I have four things written down. Number three, at what point does a student do work simply so that he or she can receive a reward rather than doing their best just because that's how they're expected to operate? And again, that comes back again to your classroom culture and whether you're expecting your students to do their best, work hard, no matter if there is a reward or not. Because ultimately, my goal for my students is to be able to do their best job, and at the end of the day, no matter whether they've received something they can hold in their hands or not, they say, I did my best, that's the reward I got. Did my best. Fourth thing to consider, what does it say to student A over here if he struggles and he struggles, schoolwork is hard for him and he cannot ever make this incentive, just cannot do it. He doesn't have the capabilities. And then he looks across the room at student B, who barely breaks a sweat and just gets the incentive every time, every single time. What does that say? And what does that do for your relationships amongst your students? So, let's talk about this a bit. One thing we need to determine when we're thinking about an incentive is whether a student is capable of doing what we're asking them or not. That is something can be difficult to determine because we're all people and we all get lazy. And sometimes a student simply is lazy and is just having an attitude, being stubborn and just not cooperating. There also are such things as learning disabilities, and I think it takes a lot of communication between you and the parents. It takes time for you to get to know your student. And sometimes it may even take a little bit of more professional help to determine whether the student actually has a little bit of a different connection in their brain or whether they're just being plain lazy. There is such a thing. Well, I don't know if this is a made-up term or not, but learned helplessness. So consider this boy named Craig. So the teacher comes in the morning. Good morning, everyone. Time for math class. Today in math class, we're going to do something different, something new. Automatically, Craig's hand goes up. I'm going to need help. Can't do it. Really? I don't know if you've ever experienced that or not, but there are students like that in our classrooms. And that's something that can be trained out of them, and it's something that needs to be trained out of them. Something that they're gonna need to get over before they move on in life. It's a mindset, something that we've convinced ourselves of. We need to be proactive in helping them get out of the rut that that mentality brings. Let me read a little bit more in here. So here are a few phrases that can increase feelings of learned helplessness. So we're thinking about learned helplessness. You, You feel helpless, but that's because you've been coddled too much, or you've been spoiled too much, or something. Listen to this. Here's some phrases that can bring that on. Let me do that for you. I'll handle it. I'll talk to your mother to see if I can get her to change her mind. I'll send the teacher a note. That's too difficult for you. I'll call the store and see if they have any left. Let me pour that. You might drop it. I don't know if those are phrases commonly used in your experience or not. Here's some phrases that can help to increase independence and decrease learned helplessness. I'll get the job started and you can finish it. Take a chance. See if you can do it. I know you can. Sounds like you have a problem. What solutions have you thought about? Let me teach you how to do this yourself. Which phrases do you use most commonly? A child who doesn't have any confidence in himself or herself will always underperform, always, without fail. At least that's my feeling on it. And I believe that we as teachers have an incredible opportunity to help our students be the achievers that they are supposed to be. God made them each special with talents, and He wants them to achieve, and I hope that you want them to achieve as well. All right, I wanted to read a little bit more about this whole rewards thing, incentives. Some observations in this book that have come from research done on rewards. We talked about some of them already. Rewards can divert attention from the actual task. The reward becomes the goal, not the successful mastery of the task. Rewards can discourage risk-taking. How many of you like to take risks? Oh, there's a few hands go up, not very many. It's kind of scary. Kind of scary. When a reward is withheld, children often view this as a form of punishment. In order to ensure the receipt of a reward, students often select tasks of minimal difficulty when provided with a choice of activities. I'll do the easiest thing I can so I can get this candy bar. Rewards can actually undermine a child's interest and motivation related to a task. The progress made by students in a reward program is often temporary and short-lived. When the reward system is discontinued, the student's motivation wanes significantly. Reward systems can impact negatively on both winners and losers. That might be a new thought. Obviously, if a child fails in public, they risk a lot of humiliation, embarrassment. And a child who always succeeds might sometimes feel that their value is just rooted in this thing that they are better than the others and they're doing better than the others. Reward systems do little to assist the child in being a creative, self-directed, independent learner. The competitive nature of reward systems can negatively impact the relationships and cooperation between and among students. Rewards are often used as the sole incentive for students to master the curriculum. And by giving tangible rewards to students on a regular basis, the teacher is fostering and enhancing their extrinsic motivation. You may have heard of intrinsic from the inside. Extrinsic, I assume, would be from the outside. So we talked about some of that stuff already. Rewards can be a beautiful thing. They can really have a good effect, but they also can be damaging to the student in the long run. All right. There are six motivational styles that are outlined in this book. Six P's. I'm going to write them up here. And now, I don't want to put everything in a box. And we can't put all our students in a box. But there are some very interesting things presented about these different ways that different children are motivated. Some of them I'm sure you've thought of. Some of them may be new to you. All right, so we've got projects, people, praise, prizes, prestige, and power. Some more alliteration going on if you were in the last class in this room. Let's look at each of these just briefly. Projects. So a child motivated by projects is going to be they're not going to do well with a big list of math worksheets that they have to do, just papers that they have to fill out. It's not going to do them any good. They will do well if you give them an opportunity to do something different than the textbook, maybe. Write a letter or design a bulletin board or whatever it might be. There's lots of different things you can do with that. But that's what motivates some children. The child motivated by people will be very affected by people around him. If he wants to sit beside somebody at lunch and they say, that seat's already taken, well, that could hurt his feelings. He's always worried about bullying and what other people are thinking of him, and just, it really bothers him. And the teacher has an opportunity to establish a relationship, show interest in their lives. That'll go a long way in helping the people student be motivated. Praise. This child will enjoy being recognized for their work. He might enjoy if he's able to take his work home and post it on the fridge at home so his mom can see it. That's what motivates him. Let's all stand again. Prizes. We've talked about prizes a little bit, rewards. In my teaching, I have become a supporter of doing, how many of you do like a whole classroom incentive where the whole room is working towards something? Okay. Thank you. You may be seated again. It might be something as simple as saying, okay, for every 100% you guys get, we'll put a quarter in a jar, and then once the jar is full enough of quarters, we'll have pizza for lunch or something like that. Now, I like that. For one thing, it feels better to me because the whole class is working towards it. However, you have to be careful that you don't end up with one student feeling very terrible because they're not able to contribute anything and the others picking on them and all that fun stuff. Unfun stuff. Now, another thing about setting a reward system for my students, I'm talking in my experience here. So let's just say you have Andy over here that has a 95% average on his report card, okay? And you have Bill over here that has a 78% average on his report card. Pretty different. It is not fair, this is off, it goes without saying, but to say, okay, next grading period, everybody who gets 95% on their report card gets $15. Well, it's great for the first guy. He just has to keep his average where it was, but to expect a student to go from 78 to 95 in one grading period, that's a pretty steep climb. Now, one thing that I like doing, so you can say, and you can give me other ideas. I'm open to other ideas, most definitely. So what about this? If your average is from 94 to 100, which I've never seen 100 on a grading period average, but it happens, I'm sure, sometimes, all you have to do is keep your average where it was. As long as it's still at 94 to 100 in the next grading period, you qualify to get this reward. If your average is, say, between maybe 88 and 93, then you got to bring your average up 1 point. If your average is below, so say 85, you got to bring your average up 2 points. And so that way, you're working the students against themselves rather than working them against everybody else and making them feel bad when they can't achieve as well as somebody else can. Just an idea. So prizes, prestige. What does prestige mean anyway?
Being well known.
Okay, has to do with what other people think of you. The child motivated by prestige is going to be very disturbed if you give them a public reprimand in front of others. Well, that's what public means, I guess. That's going to really bug them. It's going to be really difficult for them to handle. That doesn't mean it can't ever be done. I said something wrong. This is the child that'll be thrilled if there's any prize or keepsake they can put on the fridge at home. But it's our job as a teacher to make sure that that child knows, in our eyes, they are valuable. And we care about them, and we care about them as a person. And another thing on that, it's important that when you reprimand any child, that you make sure you criticize, I don't know if criticize is even the right word, but you correct the mistake they made, not focus on them as a person. Make sure you Make sure you make that distinction. You don't say, oh, you're just my worst student today. You say, I'm not happy with the way you, and then you can go on. It'll make a difference in how your students take the reprimands that have to be sometimes. The last one here is power. Child motivated by power. And a lot of children, a lot of children like to have power over a situation. And think about this scenario. So you've got a student, you tell them to do something, that student, so you're in control, right? You've got the power here, you're telling the student to do something. That student does it, but they do it just a little bit different maybe than what you wanted them to, just a touch different. And so all of a sudden, your blood pressure starts going up a little bit. And all of a sudden, the student is now in control of this situation, and he has his teacher's feelings just kind of at his command, and he can make him madder and make him madder and make him madder. So there you have an example of a student taking the power away from the teacher. You don't want that to happen. For one thing, I don't think it's at all healthy ever to get in a power struggle with one of your students. That is just dangerous, really dangerous. The problem is that if you look, you can find opportunities for power struggles every day almost, especially with certain individuals. And some of that could stem from the fact that some people just are motivated by power, and guess what? Those are the ones that make the good leaders when they get older. They make the good leaders, and sometimes it's a little bit hard to think about that when you're in the middle of a conflict of some kind. I believe it's okay with a student motivated by power for you to sometimes lose a battle if a battle comes up. I don't think it's okay for the student to go around proclaiming that, oh, I won this battle over Mr. whatever or Miss whoever it was. The student has to realize that in the end, you're the authority up here. But to have a public confrontation between you and a student in front of the whole class, that's not healthy. Not at all. Because I, as a teacher, can feel like, well, if I lose a battle, if I give in to a student, well, then what are my students going to think of me? It's a valid thought. So, there's more that could be said. There's those six things, and if a student is motivated by, let's say, power, and you try to motivate that student using prizes, it's not going to really work. It's going to be hard to get a student motivated if you're using the wrong motivational method. And again, I don't think we can put every child in what we teach in one of those six boxes necessarily, but that was helpful for me in kind of sorting out some of this stuff when it comes to motivation, because every student is different. So, it's your turn. We're almost finished here. Anybody want to share something that's worked for you? How do you motivate your students? Or don't you motivate your students?
In our high school, we use a token system. And students can earn tokens by various ways. And so what that does, it spreads the opportunity out and mm-hmm. doesn't focus on just one group. Mm-hmm. One way is academic. If they get 100% on the test, they can get, a token. We have volleyball championships throughout each quarter. Those that are on the winning team get two tokens, and those that are on second place team get one. Perfect attendance, they get one. And those tokens can be used to apply for test grades, slightly, to elevate their test grades. That's been effective. Mm-hmm. I like what you said about being careful about not giving prizes for that which should be done normally. Mm-hmm. And it's almost become a joke. They know exactly what I'm going to say. And I say, hey, Nolan, would you pick up that piece of trash? And they do. And can I have a token? You know, my stock answer is I don't give tokens for being normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful about mm-hmm.
that. And another thing with a system like that is you can expand it to include other things. Like, so if you read a book and bring a book report to school,
right. Good
you
behavior.
Can get a token or... If you do something good for someone else outside of school, even, you can do stuff like that.
Right.
Thank you. Anything else?
I like the idea of the motivational technique, whatever it is, being something that the whole class is going to work together towards. This avoids individualizing those that can't contribute.
Mm-hmm.
It also has a tendency to pull a class together,
mm-hmm.
to cheer others on,
mm-hmm.
and to be creative, that our whatever our incentive, what moves the incentive is something that every child can contribute
mm-hmm.
to one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Feel a part of moving their class forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first and the second bout.
All right. Okay, thank you. Just remember, I think your goal and motivation, just remember that you're preparing these students for life when they get out of school. And if you have an unmotivated student in school, he's going to have a hard time in life when he gets out of school. Thank you for your attention and for your help.